I'm not sure if you've noticed, but it's definitely allergy season. I love spring, but I struggle with allergies, which are not the most fun. Luckily, with Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, I can say bring on the blooms and face allergies head on. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved, so you can attack watery eyes and battle runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. I'm obsessed with Kleenex. I always have a box of tissues nearby. I'm always carrying them in my purse. I feel like that prepared friend. But I do have allergies. You could probably hear it in my voice this time of year. You know, we're struggling out here, okay? But if I'm going to be rubbing this tissue on my face, you know, I have makeup on. I want it to be like soft and comfortable. I don't want to like, be ripping up my nose. And that is why I love the Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, because they'd get the job done. They're non-irritating. They are just the go-to. I mean, doesn't everybody love Kleenex? I feel like I grew up using Kleenex. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 154 of the True Crime All the Time Unsolved podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibby Gibson. What's going on, Gib?
Hey, man, I'm doing well.
You're doing well?
Yeah.
You struggled there for a word that would truly convey how you were doing.
I just wanted to make it suspenseful.
Oh, you wanted to drag it out.
Yeah.
Make people guess.
Exactly.
How you were doing before you lowered it on them.
Yeah. I wanted to build up the level of concern.
Concern / excitement.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. We have a very good episode on tap for everyone. But first, let's give our Patreon and PayPal shout outs and all that. We had Heather Bolden. Milholland.
Hey, Milholland.
Cindy Conway.
What's going on, Cindy?
Kathy Ray.
Hey, Kathy.
AJ.
What's going on, AJ?
Mavis Howard.
Hey, Mavis.
Erica Skeen.
Hey, thanks, Erica.
Courtney.
What's going on, Courtney?
Chase Watkins.
Hey, Chase.
Candy White.
What's going on, Candy?
Laura Shea.
Thank you, Laura.
Sarah Hansen.
Is that like the puppets Hansen?
That's Jim Henson.
I'm way off.
You're thinking of the brothers Hansen that like... band with those brothers.
We better just get past this one. Hey, Sarah.
Jeannie Schneider Mitchell.
Hey, Jeannie.
Emma Gustafson.
Ooh, Gustafson.
Miranda Taylor.
Hey, Miranda.
And Rachel Pecoraro.
Ooh, Pecorari.
Raro.
Pecoraro.
You crack me up, man. Then if we go back into the vault.
Let's go in the vault.
This week we selected N. Frender.
What's going on, N?
Been with us a very long time.
Yeah, appreciate that.
An amazing supporter of TCAT and Unsolved. We appreciate all the new Patreon support, as well as the people that continue to support us month after month.
They're amazing.
We had some great PayPal donations as well. Mary Ashley.
Hey, Mary.
Melissa Buell.
What's going on, Melissa?
Candace Zugich.
Hey, Candace.
Gerilyn Jensen.
What's going on, Gerilyn?
And Patrick Martins.
Thanks, Patrick.
So thank all of you as well. Gibbs, right now on True Crime All the Time, we have an episode out on a man named Philip Jablonski.
Ooh, man, what a messed up dude that was.
Monster.
Yeah.
Guy was an absolute monster. And he was a guy that I don't think many people will have heard of. They won't have heard of his story. I was not familiar with it before I really started to research it, but... he's as bad as, I won't say he's as bad as they come. I mean, we've talked about a lot of really bad individuals, but he's close.
He's a jacked up dude.
Yeah, he was really into some bad stuff. So make sure you check that out. All right, Gibbs, are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved?
Yeah.
We are talking about the case of Brittany Wood, who went missing in 2012. Brittany Nicole Wood was born on September 25th, 1992 in Mobile, Alabama, to Wallace Hankey and Chessie Wood. She had an older brother, Derek Wood. In 2003, Brittany was just 11 years old. She was attending her local Baptist church daycare program after school. She went to the daycare director and said that someone was touching her in a bad spot.
Probably a very hard thing for a child to build the courage up to do in the first place.
I would think so. Now, I also think on the other side, if you're an adult in a position, you know, if you're a teacher or if you're anyone,
yeah,
and you have a child that comes to you and says, somebody's touching me in a bad spot, you know right away.
Yeah.
Something is horribly wrong.
Right. It's not good.
She told the daycare director that she was afraid to tell the police, but she wanted it to stop. And she went on to give some additional information. She told this daycare director that it was her maternal grandmother's boyfriend, a 53-year-old man named Ronald Robertson, who had been sexually abusing her for the last 2 years.
So since she was 9 years old.
Sickening.
Yeah, disturbing.
Police were contacted. Obviously, Gibbs, they're going to go out and question Ronald Robertson. When they did, he denied everything. He denied doing anything inappropriate. He denied ever touching Brittany. But they didn't believe him. And eventually, they found enough evidence to arrest and charge Ronald for sexual abuse and assault. At the age of 12, Brittany testified at this man's trial. And Gibbs, she told the jury exactly what happened. She said that he would frequently ask her to get him some water and bring it back to him in his bedroom. Once she got there, he would make her take her clothes off, and then he proceeded to sexually abuse her.
That's got to be tough for a 12-year-old to sit up on a stand and say all that.
I think it's tough to tell one person. You add in the fact that you're in a courtroom telling this to a bunch of strangers, and your abuser is sitting at a table, what, 20 feet away from you?
Yeah, be tough.
Very tough. On May 18th, 2005, a Mobile County jury found Robertson guilty of first-degree rape and first-degree sexual abuse. And apparently, Gibbs, Alabama does not mess around with child abuse. He received a life sentence for the rape.
Yeah.
And he received a 10-year sentence for the sexual abuse.
Yeah, they definitely hammered it down on him. Which is great.
Which is great. I think you and I are in agreement. Outside of murder, what is worse than abusing a helpless child?
Yeah. Uncalled for.
Now, Robertson did make a statement in court saying that he raised Brittany's mother. He helped raise her too, as he dated their grandmother for over 14 years. He said he was sorry for what happened and said that if he hurt them in any way, he apologizes. Gibbs, from that, the judge asked him, all right, if you feel as though you're innocent, why are you apologizing? And he told the court, well, evidently I'm convicted of it. Okay. I don't remember doing a thing to her. I loved these kids like they were my own the whole time I was with their mother and grandmother. That's one of those really kind of strange fine lines.
Right.
If you believe truly in your heart that you did nothing wrong, you didn't do what you've been accused of, you didn't do what you've been convicted of, I know for me, it would be very hard for me to stand up and apologize for something I know I didn't do.
Right.
So I think even the judge was kind of saying, you know, these things that you're saying, they're kind of ringing hollow, because why would you be apologizing and at the same time saying you didn't do anything?
Because it doesn't add up, man.
Robertson attempted to appeal his conviction, but it was upheld. He's serving his time in the Fountain Correctional Facility. But Gibbs, even with a life sentence, he could possibly be up for parole as early as June 1st, 2020. It's like 3 months away.
That's really close, man.
It is. Now, I don't think there's any way in hell that he's going to be paroled.
No, I can't imagine.
With a life sentence. But you think about the toll that this took on Brittany. Apparently, Brittany told close friends that she had constant nightmares about the abuse she suffered throughout her life.
Definitely be devastating. And I don't know how you could ever forget something like that.
No, I don't think you would ever forget it, truly forget it. Now, can you find a way to work through it and lead a productive life? Sure. But it doesn't mean that it won't always be with you in some way.
Right.
You're not going to be able to completely block it out, I don't think. It's too traumatic.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're going to have moments where it just might overpower you.
Sure.
Yeah.
When Brittany was 17 years old, she gave birth to her daughter, Peyton. Now, there's not a lot of information out there about Peyton. And Gibbs, I really don't expect there to be. And to be honest with you, I'm glad that there isn't. I think her guardians are trying very hard to do what they can to protect her from the media.
Yeah.
But it's 2 years after Peyton was born, on May 30th, 2012, that Brittany vanished in her hometown of Mobile, Alabama. Brittany had planned on visiting her friend Courtney later that day. This came out from her mother, but Courtney didn't pick her up. So it was said that Brittany got a ride to the other side of town, and eventually, later on, her uncle, Donald Paul Holland Sr., came and picked her up at 7:30 p.m. that night. This later came from an eyewitness. Her uncle came to get her so that she could go back to his house for the night in the Styx River area at his home on Waterworld Road. This was the last time she was ever seen. Her cell phone records show that she did travel west from Mobile over the Mobile Bay to the Styx River area. And the last ping from her cell phone occurred near Waterworld Road, where her uncle lived.
I mean, it's a pretty good sign of knowing where the last place she was.
Yeah, you and I have talked about cell phone pings before. They've come up in some of the bigger cases, right? How reliable is that information? How accurate can it truly be?
Right.
I mean, I think it puts you in the right ballpark when you add it to the fact that her uncle picked her up, according to an eyewitness, and her uncle lived on Waterworld Road. The fact that her cell phone pinged near there.
Not surprising.
No, seems very plausible. And Gibbs, I think it's important to give a description of Brittany. I think that's important in any missing person's case. Brittany was 5'3". She weighed about 105 pounds. She's Caucasian with dirty blonde hair, blue eyes. She has a piercing in her lip and a tattoo on her left thigh that says Peyton, and it has a bunch of butterflies around it. Brittany was an attractive young woman. She was a smoker, which may be important information. Who knows?
Yeah.
On the day that she went missing, May 30th, 2012, Brittany was wearing blue denim shorts, a blue t-shirt, and flip-flops. She was carrying a tote bag that was either teal or pink. And apparently inside the tote bag was an extra set of clothes, her makeup, and her curling iron. And of course, like any young person, Brittany had with her her cell phone. And obviously we know that because we've already talked about the cell phone pings. But Gibbs, this is where this entire case starts to get very strange. We're going to get into some rabbit holes very quickly. And some of this is going to make people scratch their heads. It's going to make people extremely upset.
Yeah, it's going to make them question humanity.
Just 2 days later on June 1st, Brittany's uncle Donald didn't return home. He had mentioned to his wife Wendy the night before that he was having thoughts about taking his own life because of some recent events going on, which we'll detail out here in a little bit. So on that June 1st day, Wendy and her friend, they went out looking for Donald. And Wendy found their SUV on a secluded dirt road overlooking Fish River. As she and her friend approached the SUV, they noticed blood on the windshield. As they get up to the SUV, they find Donald inside. He had been shot in the back of his head, behind his ear. So he's inside the SUV, Gibbs. The SUV is facing the river. It's like it's parked facing the river.
Right.
But he's still alive. He's unconscious, but he's still alive. So they called emergency services, right? They come out, they get Donald, they take him to the hospital, but he passes away 2 days later, never regaining consciousness, which is huge in this case because it means he was never able to tell anyone what happened, not only to himself, but to Brittany as well. When he died, Gibbs, we just don't know what he took with him. We don't know what he knew. The police and medical examiner called his death a self-inflicted wound. They said he took his own life. But people would question this, right? Family members, law enforcement, and even the media have questioned if it was possible that Donald shot himself based on the placement of the shot.
Yeah. And I think that's because most would say if you're going to kill yourself, there's easier ways to pull that shot off instead of reaching behind your head at a weird angle behind your ear and pulling the trigger.
And I think that's what it is, right? They're basing it on the angle, what his arm position would have had to have been to make the shot.
Yeah.
The difficulty of the shot, like you said, there's much easier ways to shoot yourself if that is what you are trying to do.
Yeah.
But that's the big question. And I think some of these people that did not believe that Donald took his own life and obviously opposed the medical examiner's finding said to them, it appeared like this was a classic hit, an execution style hit, a mob style hit, whatever you want to call it. The police did find a gun in the car. And it's interesting because the handgun was registered to Brittany Wood. And it was known that Brittany Wood carried a gun pretty much all the time for personal protection. I mean, there are some reports, Gibbs, that say she carried it wherever she went.
Hey, as we dive into this case, I don't blame her for carrying one.
Yeah, I think it's going to become evident. Maybe some of the reasons why she felt as though she needed some personal protection.
Yeah.
The other thing that police found in the SUV was a cell phone battery that was later determined to belong to Brittany's cell phone. But here's the thing. At this point in time, no one really knows that Brittany is missing, right? There's all this commotion around the death of Donald, and rightfully so, but they're finding items that are determined to belong to Brittany. No one really asked the question where Brittany was at first. It wasn't until the next day that her dad and stepmother reported her missing. Now, obviously, they hadn't heard from her, and I think after the death of her uncle, they were extremely concerned. And this is when police found out by looking at her cell phone records, the tower pings, that her last cell signal was somewhere pretty close to where the SUV was found. and Donald's house on Waterworld Road. So all of a sudden, there is a lot going on. Brittany's missing. Her uncle is dead from a gunshot wound that turns out to be her gun.
Yeah.
The medical examiner said it was suicide. Police are probably basing much of their investigation off the medical examiner's report. Why would they not?
Yeah, it makes sense.
But there are a lot of questions to answer, right? So what happened to Brittany? Did her uncle do something to her? Did she do something to him and then take off? Who else was involved?
Yeah.
Possibly. Good. In all of this? Because now it's seeming as though maybe these two things are connected. We know Brittany was supposed to end up at her uncle's house.
Right.
We know her cell phone was pinging in that general vicinity. Now her uncle's dead.
And I think as we go through some of these upcoming events, I think it weaves it even tighter together. Like something had to happen to Brittany the night before.
But let's go back to her uncle first. We mentioned it. He talked to his wife the night before about possibly taking his life. Why would he do that? Well, it was because he was under investigation for running what was said to have been one of the largest sex rings in the state of Alabama, a sex ring that unfortunately also included minors.
Yeah, not the kind of thing you want to be known for.
Not at all. So if that's something you've been doing and you find out that they're about ready to come after you for it, okay, now it makes sense that he was under a lot of stress. He was thinking about taking his own life. The day that Donald was found dead, he was scheduled to meet with investigators to discuss the accusations against him. Some people look at that as another reason, right? I don't want to have to talk to these investigators.
Right.
I'm not going to be able to BS my way out of this. They probably have so much information. They probably have evidence.
I don't want to go to jail.
I don't want to go to jail. And I don't want to go to jail for this because we know.
Exactly.
You're going to be looked at as the lowest of the lowest scum, which let's face it, you are. If you do something involving a sex ring with minors.
Yeah. Scum.
And as it turns out, Gibbs, the case that investigators were building against not only Donald, but also against his wife, Wendy, as well, and several other members of Brittany's family, it was a strong case. And it was a very nasty, rancid case.
Very rancid.
I mean, these accusations involved child molestation, underage prostitution, sex with minors, child pornography. And it's something that just didn't crop up overnight. This is something that had been going on for generations.
Which is so scary.
Almost as if it was handed down.
Yeah, this is how we do things.
Allegedly, Donald determined which adult got time with a certain child. He determined when this would occur, how many times someone could be with a certain family member. And it sounds to me, Gibbs, as though children were rotated from family member to family member.
It sounds like he was just a pimp, pimping his nieces, nephews.
A few months before Brittany went missing, Randall Scott Wood, Brittany's 45-year-old uncle, approached authorities to strike a deal because he had been charged with a number of felonies regarding sexual abuse of a minor. That's not good. So he wanted to make some type of deal, but apparently he also wanted to come clean because he had fallen in love with one of the young girls he had sexually assaulted over the years.
Now he has a conscience and wants to do things right.
Yeah, maybe, but I think it's more about saving his own ass at this point than that. Yeah. I truly do. But either way, he began laying out this whole thing, how the sex ring worked, how it started, who ran it, what person played what role. He told the police who was involved voluntarily and who was forced. Police had to be floored with the information that this guy revealed. Floored.
I'm sure they couldn't believe what they were hearing.
What they did was they got the special sex crimes unit involved along with children's services. People from agencies began discreetly talking to some of these underage children. And very quickly, Gibbs, they realized that this was massive. There were many layers to it, and it was a huge concern.
Yeah, I'm sure they're not happy this is happening under their noses.
No, I'm sure not at all. I mean, yes, happening on their watch, happening in their town at all, doesn't make them look good that they don't know anything about it. Now, they're going to bust it, but it still has to be somewhat embarrassing.
Oh, for everybody involved.
Now, to put it in perspective, timeline-wise, it was just 2 weeks after these children were interviewed that Brittany went missing and her uncle Donald supposedly shot himself. With Brittany missing, the Mobile police, as well as the state police, they set up some search parties to try to locate her. So, yeah, the police are doing their thing. They are trying to look for Brittany, but I think very early on, they start to believe that it was possible. Brittany was killed by her uncle the day before he died, and then he hid her body in the hopes that it would never be found. Now, there were other people, Gibbs, I think, that thought maybe it was Wendy, Brittany's aunt, who killed Brittany and killed Donald as well. Because I think some of these people thought it was really Wendy that was running things.
Yeah, the ringleader.
The ringleader for, you know, this sex ring. But there were tons of theories, right, that would develop over time. One was that Brittany ran away, possibly after being sexually assaulted by her uncle and or after shooting him herself. You can just imagine the number of theories that would crop up once some of this information started to come out.
I could just hear it in the local diner right now. You know, people trying to make sense of it all and then putting their own spin on what happened to Brittany and how this all occurred. Yeah.
Because here's where I think this case is very different from a lot of the unsolved cases that we do, right? Very often we are talking about somebody who a lot of times comes from a very good family.
Yeah.
They disappear. Everybody's out searching for them. What you have in this case is, okay, they're searching for Brittany, but you have this whole circus that is going on pretty much at the same time.
Yeah.
That involves a major sex ring that apparently her family is involved in. It's a factor that you don't have in a lot of unsolved disappearance cases.
So where's all your resources? Probably split up.
They're all over the place.
Yeah.
Because the disappearance of a 19-year-old girl is very important.
Yeah.
Right. You want to devote resources to that. But when you find out that there is a major sex ring operating that involves children, that is very, very important as well. And there's no doubt you have to devote a massive amount of resources to that. It's got to be stopped. You have to figure out who's involved. It's complex.
And that will take away from helping locate Brittany.
Yeah, no doubt. But I think, you know, one of the things that a lot of people voiced was that, you know, when you get into some of the theories about Brittany leaving voluntarily, would she leave her daughter Peyton behind?
Yeah, I think there's no way Brittany would leave Peyton, knowing how she felt about her. There's just no way she would leave her 2-year-old daughter behind.
On Sunday, June 10th, this was 12 days since Brittany was last seen, a torso was found on the beach in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. This is about 90 miles west of Mobile. They thought it could be Brittany. And part of that theory was that they thought the water current would take a body from where Brittany's uncle lived to Bay St. Louis. They also theorized that sharks and other fish could have easily done damage to the body, leaving just a torso. And when the body is inspected, the initial observation is that it's a teenage female. She's Caucasian and most likely between the ages of 15 and 22. But eventually the police were able to figure out that this was not the torso of Brittany Wood. And you know, her family was elated. Oh, had to be.
Yeah.
Because that means there's still hope. Right? There's still optimism that Brittany will be found alive.
Yeah.
Now, Gibbs, we talked about the fact that police had interviewed discreetly several underage children. They had also talked to some adults that they felt were not part of the sex ring, the sex syndicate, but that had possibly been abused when they were children, when they were younger. Police had plans to interview Brittany about her past, but they never got the chance because she went missing before the interview took place.
Brittany's stepmom would later tell the media that Brittany had received some private Facebook messages from a female relative telling Brittany that she had been raped by three of their male relatives on May 27th. This was just 3 days before Brittany disappeared. This was some critical information that Brittany wanted to share with the police investigators when she met with them.
So police are starting to dig into this sex ring case. At the same time, they're still looking for Brittany. They brought in some cadaver dogs and had them search around Brittany's uncle Donald's home near the river. They didn't find anything. The police interviewed the 16-year-old rape victim who messaged Brittany on Facebook. This teen would later testify in court. Gibbs, what this girl told investigators was heinous.
It's rough, man.
She said that the sexual abuse started early. She said she was still in diapers.
I'm going to throw up.
She said it was hard to understand why these things were happening, because these were people that said they loved her. These are people that, you know, took care of her. Why in the world would these people do these things?
Yeah.
She just couldn't understand why her family had done this to her, the abuse, sharing her with other family members, strangers, making her do things she didn't want to do. She said that as she got older, she was forced to participate in group sex with many different family members, friends, strangers. Gibbs, she said that sometimes there was just a huge circle.
Yeah.
With as many as a dozen, maybe more adults, and they would just switch all night long.
Yep. Just abuse one child after the next child.
I know we keep saying it, but Gibbs, this is so disturbing, right? We are talking about some very sick individuals. This would be a sick person on their own. But when you start talking about essentially a family and an extended family, right? Branches of a family, and this happening for generations.
Yeah.
It's stomach turning.
And clearly, they didn't think they were doing anything wrong because they continue to do it again and again and again.
Well, if it's happening for generations, I think it's natural to assume that kids that were involved years and years ago at some point become adults. And now they're participating in this as an adult.
It's this way of the way their life goes. It's crazy.
Police weren't even sure, right? How many children in and outside of the family were affected over this large number of years that this had been going on. But what they do have is several statements from victims. And at a certain point, they developed a very solid case against many different family members. In June and July of 2012, police began to arrest members of Brittany's family. They started placing kids with foster homes or family members that they knew were not involved in this sex ring. I think that's an important thing to point out. I don't want to cast a shadow over this entire family.
Right.
There were a large number of people in this family that were part of this sex ring, but I don't want to say that everybody was.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's important. Now, I'll say this, you better be damn sure if you're going to start placing kids with family members that you're crystal clear they were not a part of this. And I'm sure police did that. By the end of July, 11 members of this family had been charged with incest, rape, sodomy, and production of child pornography, as well as a host of a whole bunch of other charges. The arrested men included Brittany's brother, Derek Thomas Wood, Brittany's uncles, Randall Scott Wood and Dustin Alton Kent, her step-cousin, Donald Paul Holland Jr., a relative by marriage named James Kumba, and two family friends, William Brownlee and Nelson Morgan. There were women charged as well. Brittany's own mother, Chessie Wood, was charged. Brittany's aunt, Wendy, Donald's wife, was charged. Her uncle, Dustin's wife, Mindy Kent, and finally, Wendy Holland's best friend, and the person that was with her when Donald's body was found, Jennifer Gonzalez Moore. This is a lot of people.
It's a boatload, man.
Brittany's mother talked to the media.
They're going to put me in the paddy wagon and then go get all the monsters and put them in the van with me and then throw me in front of the TV cameras on the way to jail over a 9-year-old suspended driver's license. If they would have just took that little bit of energy they took for that bull crap and put it towards my daughter that deserves every minute of their time, quite possibly we could have closure to my daughter's disappearance.
Chessie Wood believes the sex crime allegations have made organizations leery of working with her to search for Brittany, despite tips she's received about Brittany's whereabouts.
I lost the public, period.
She says she can see why. She even believes some of her family members are guilty of the heinous crimes.
They didn't just hurt their children, they hurt mine too.
Including Brittany Wood and her son. For now, Chessie says she's setting that aside to focus on what's important. And that's finding Brittany.
Brittany is my number one focus. I have got to bring her home for her baby.
So that was a clip of Brittany's mother, Chessie Wood. I think it's interesting where we can to play some clips and hear, you know, some of these people talk. She also told the press, quote, there are innocent people in this and there are guilty people in this. I don't know how the judicial system is going to figure it all out because they're not the sharpest tools in the shed. So a couple things. In the clip, she definitely shied away from talking about the charges that she faced.
Right.
Regarding the sex ring. And I'm not sure who she's saying is not the sharpest tool in the shed. The rest of her family or the judicial system?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure about that. She did tell the media the number one thing here is to find Brittany. The number two thing is to get all these sick people off the streets. But I think she was pretty firm.
Yeah.
In some of these statements that she made to the media that she was not part of this thing. She didn't have anything to do with it. So trials began for some of the accused pretty quickly, while some people were able to delay their trial. Brittany's brother, Derek Wood, was indicted on charges of second-degree rape and second-degree sodomy as part of the investigation. His victims were said to have been between the ages of 12 and 16 years old at the time of the abuse. But his attorney was able to work out a deal with the prosecution and the judge, and it centered around the fact that during some of this time frame where they were accusing Derek of being an abuser, he was a minor. And again, you know, he's telling them, I just thought this was normal.
This is what we do, don't we?
This is what we did as a family. So because he was a minor during at least some part of this, the judge allowed for the youthful offender status to be applied to Derek. Now, the terms of his eventual deal are sealed, but the most that he could have received under the status was 3 years. So no doubt, Gibbs, Derek Wood did some time. We don't know how much, but more than likely he's out, right? He's out in the world. Now, I think you can say that this is a guy that is probably going to be in need of a lot of therapy.
I would think so.
You know, I keep going back to, yeah, what these people did was horrible.
Yeah,
there's no doubt. And I don't want anybody to think I'm saying it's not. Growing up in this environment, what does it do to you? And like we said, do you at some point believe that this is normal everyday behavior? And then you continue that behavior as an adult, but now you're an abuser.
Yeah.
Instead of the one that was getting abused. But is it to you still a normal part of everyday life?
Because it's something that you learn was what we do.
Yeah. I hate to even think about it like that. Brittany's mother, Chessie Wood's trial was scheduled for March 28, 2016. But she was successful in delaying her trial. And she did keep telling the media that she didn't have anything to do with it. And she wasn't going to bargain for something that she didn't do and something that she didn't know anything about.
Yeah, she held true to that.
And eventually she was able to make a deal with the prosecution. She pled guilty to reckless endangerment, which was a misdemeanor offense. And again, claimed that she never knew about any of these things that occurred until it came out after Brittany went missing. And that's when she first heard about what other members of her family were doing. But Gibbs, I think there are a lot of people that do not believe this woman and her statements that she had no idea about any of this. And you and I don't know either way.
No, we don't.
But I will say there are a lot of people that do not believe that she's being truthful.
They point to the fact that her sisters, her brothers, her son.
Like literally everyone in her immediate family.
Yeah.
But yet somehow she's in the dark. She doesn't know where they go. She doesn't know what they do. I can see why people would have a serious hang up
right
about believing her. Wendy Wood Holland, Donnie Holland's wife and Chessie's sister, was found guilty of sodomy, sexual torture, and sexual abuse of a minor. She received the harshest sentence out of the entire family. She was sentenced by a Baldwin County jury to 219 years in prison.
Good.
Yeah, great. She should be.
She was married to the ringleader, or maybe she was the ringleader, but whatever.
On top of that, she's not eligible for parole. I have no problem with people receiving, you know, this type of very harsh sentence for the sexual abuse of a child. I don't have a problem at all with it. She was also charged in Mobile County and pleaded guilty to the same charges and received additional prison time. Now, Mobile County did try to make a deal with Wendy. They would give her a lesser sentence if she would tell them what happened to Brittany and where her body was.
Yeah, but Wendy didn't want to cooperate.
Apparently, she said she wasn't interested and didn't want to comment on Brittany's disappearance.
Which is kind of telling in its own.
It can be. You can look at it that way. You can also look at it as, I've already got 219 years in prison.
Yeah.
And I'm not eligible for parole. Whatever you're giving me here in Mobile County is not making a dent in my situation.
Yeah.
But you would also think that a member of the family, if they knew what happened to Brittany and had the chance to clear it up, again, even if she had involvement, now maybe she didn't want to get the death penalty.
Maybe.
But I don't know.
Why not whisper to your sister then? This is what happened to your daughter.
Or maybe she doesn't know.
Yeah.
Mindy Kent, Wendy's twin sister and Chessie's sister, she was convicted in Mobile County of sodomy and sexual abuse of a child under the age of 12. Dustin Kent testified that he participated in a six-way sexual encounter that included Wendy Holland, a teen victim, his wife Mindy, and others. He said that he first saw Wendy having sex with teen victims in October 2011. And he was quoted as saying it wasn't like that was her first time. She had done this before. Dustin pleaded guilty in a Baldwin County courtroom to sodomy and incest, and then in Mobile County, pleaded guilty to sodomy and rape. Randall Wood made a plea deal because, as he said, he wanted to spare the victims from having to testify. He was charged with rape, sodomy, and child enticement. He received a 15-year sentence. William Brownlee was charged with rape, sodomy, and child abuse. He was sentenced to 20 years in prison in a Baldwin County courtroom. Gibbs, when you look at this case as a whole, you know, as we're wrapping up this episode, there were so many victims in what was described as the worst sex ring that Mobile County and the state of Alabama had seen. I think police felt, and probably still do feel, as though Brittany had been a victim in this sex ring, and that the most likely theory as to her disappearance was that she fell prey to her aunt and uncle because they wanted to keep her from talking to authorities. And what's really sad is that there was a girl, a member of this family, we don't know exactly who accused an uncle, another member of the family, of sexually abusing her all the way back in 2008. Welfare workers allegedly checked into the complaint. They couldn't substantiate it. Okay, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I don't know. What's sad is that if they were able to uncover this, how many people don't continue to be abused or maybe are never abused,
right,
for, you know, the next however many number of years. Maybe Brittany doesn't go missing because this is all uncovered and there's no need to silence her later on.
Yeah, people
just, if that's what happened.
Yeah, yeah. People just live their lives normally.
Well, that's the one thing I know for sure about this case. There was nothing normal going on in a large part of this family. And I said earlier, right, when we listened to Brittany's mom, I do think that Brittany's disappearance in some way got lost when this sex ring was uncovered for a number of reasons. You and I touched on some, right? Resources. You only have so much.
Right.
A lot of them, I guarantee, were being devoted to trying to figure out this sex ring.
Which is important, as you mentioned.
Yeah, it's definitely important.
It's got minors involved.
But add on to that the fact that police started to think pretty early, I believe, that she was a victim, not just of sexual abuse, but that she was most likely murdered.
Yeah.
To silence her. But no doubt, you're not going to get the same level of support, right? As we've seen in other cases when someone goes missing. All these people come to rally around and help find a missing girl. Now, she's 19 years old,
right,
but still, she's missing. You're not going to have that once all of this hits the media that her family is involved in this extremely heinous crime. nobody's going to come out to support this family.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
Oh, they're going to be like, I'm staying away from that.
And the person that loses is Brittany. Brittany's dad, stepmother, and her mother, they continue to look for Brittany. They haven't given up hope on her at all. I mean, if something did happen to her, at the very least, Gibbs, they want to know where she's buried.
Yeah.
They want to bring her home, give her a proper burial.
Then they can finally be at peace.
On October 8th, 2019, a group searched the area where Brittany was last thought to have been, her uncle's house on Waterworld. They had a team of search dogs and some high-tech scanning equipment.
Klaus Kidd's team members and a search dog were there. That dog and its handler spent about 30 minutes looking around that property here off Waterworld Road in the Styx River community. That property used to belong to Brittany Wood's uncle. Brittany Wood's mother, Chessie Wood, was there but didn't take part in the search. The focus of the search was around a concrete slab that Wood says had been poured around the time the 19-year-old mother disappeared. Brittany was last seen before she went to visit her uncle, Donnie Holland, who later committed suicide. A film crew from London videotaped the search as part of an ongoing documentary shoot about the missing person's case. A special piece of equipment was used to record images from underneath the concrete slab. Wood is hoping they will reveal new clues about what happened to Brittany. Baldwin County Sheriff's investigators previously conducted a search of this same property using cadaver dogs with no results. That was at the request of Mobile Police, who worked the missing persons case.
So that wasn't that long ago. It was 6 months or so.
Yeah.
So there are efforts still ongoing to either find Brittany or figure out what happened to her. Unfortunately, nothing came from this high-tech scanning equipment. They were looking, you know, penetrating down through this concrete slab, and they didn't find anything. I don't know. Very tough case.
Yeah, it's really disturbing.
Because, well, it's disturbing, no doubt. It's also a very tough disappearance case because there's a whole bunch of other things that are muddying the water, that have muddied the water over the years.
I think if her uncle was able to communicate before he passed on, that maybe they could have had some type of lead out of that.
It's definitely possible.
Yeah.
So I do think there are a lot of people that think Donnie knew what happened. Yeah. I think there are a lot of people that think Wendy knows what happened.
I think so.
And the problem is he can't talk.
No.
And she's not willing to. So.
And at this point, like you said, why would she?
She has no reason.
Yeah. There's no benefit
for other than to help her sister.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's the case of Brittany Nicole Wood. Tough all the way around.
Yeah.
We got some voicemails. You want to check them out?
Yeah, let's hear them.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. It's Sylvia from Georgia. I absolutely love the podcast. I really had not even listened to any podcast before I found you guys, and you guys are still the only one I ever listened to. I love the way you guys break down all these crime stories, and I really love how you guys spend a lot of time actually dedicating these episodes to the victims as opposed to talking too much about the perpetrators. I am team both of you, but, I really think Gibby is hilarious, every time he tries to, bring up a movie or the name of an actor or really anything and anybody. It's pretty funny. I wish you guys, were to do an episode on, Philip Greedo, I think that was his name, or is his name. He is the guy that was involved in the kidnapping of J.C. Dugard. I have read all her books. I think she's a remarkable person, and I really think stories like that need to be told to bring some awareness to how creepy and crazy people are. So, yeah, that would be great. Keep up the good work, and keep your own time ticking.
Yeah, I mean, that case is definitely on the list for sure.
It's a
very well-known
good case.
Well, there's not very many cases where you have a positive outcome.
Yeah.
That being the fact that she's alive, she's reunited with her family. Yeah.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Gibby. This is Michelle calling from Mustang, Oklahoma. I want to say, first of all, how much I love your show. I know there is a lot of work and time that goes into each episode, and so I really appreciate what you all do. I have a suggestion, not necessarily for a case, but for a new podcast. I would love to hear you all do a show on the stupid things that criminals do. Like, I heard a story not long ago about this guy that robbed a convenience store, but he left his driver's license behind, and so they arrested him, like, that day. Anyway, I think you all would do a really awesome job on that, especially with your all sense of humor. But anyway, thank you again for all you do. Stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
Gotta love stupid criminals.
Who doesn't love stupid criminals? They get themselves caught. It's a good idea. The problem with a lot of those stories is they're very short.
Yeah.
I mean, you definitely are not going to do a hour episode.
No.
On this guy that left his wallet. You're not going to find the information. Now, could you string four together in an episode?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I'm just worried that you'd run out of episode. You wouldn't be able to fill too many episodes if you're doing four or six stupid criminals per episode.
Right.
So we'll see. It's definitely it's something to think about.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. I wanted to let you know about a funny moment that you gave me about a week back. I was going to the gym and, as usual, popping on one of my favorite podcasts, your guys, and realized that it was about the LA Fitness shooting. And there I was sitting in an LA Fitness in Pittsburgh listening to a story about the LA Fitness shooting in Pittsburgh. It made me feel very strange, but I kept on listening and I kept on with my workout, but I thought it was kind of a funny coincidence. I also wanted to let you know I've been listening to your most recent TCAT Unsolved episode, and you guys were looking for a word, I think, that was kind of like nosy, but not quite as strong, and I wanted to let you know about a word we use in Pittsburgh called nebby, and that means nosy, but with a friendly or neighborly attitude. It's actually a pretty handy word, and I think everybody should start using it. Keep it up. I have really been enjoying the show, and, you know, just keep up the good work. Thanks so much. Bye.
Well, thank you very much. So Gibbs, you and I, over a long period of years, have worked with a lot of people from Pittsburgh.
A lot.
In our job, or in my old job and your current job.
Right.
People in Pittsburgh have their own language.
They do.
And we've learned a lot of it. I've never heard that one, though. Have you, nebby?
I haven't, but I will use it tomorrow.
You should use it on a conference call.
And see if they know what it means.
Say, you're being nebby.
Yeah, you're just a little nebby today.
Good morning, Mike and Gibby. I just finished listening to episode 171 about Erin Needle and Sam Shineline. And if you have women in your life, you may know that putting on eyeliner is an art. And this morning, I will be going to work with uneven eyeliner because the keystrings and the TV remote had me laughing hysterically at a point where I need not be laughing hysterically. So I'm going to work this morning with uneven eyeliner. Thanks to both of you. Love your show. Fairly new listener. And I am Julie calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Looking forward to listening to all your shows and getting caught up. And I hope y'all have a good day. Keep your own time ticking.
Well, I do have two girls and a wife, so I know something about uneven eyeliner. I know it's a bad thing.
You're wearing eyeliner right now.
But it's even.
It is even. That I will say.
I like to keep my stuff neat. Yeah. Tight.
Well, I know you like Sephora. You go there and get your eyeliner and come back and you wear it.
All right, buddy. We got to get out of here. We appreciate all the voicemails. We appreciate everyone listening.
Yeah, we do.
That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose from the best options for you fast. It's one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the new Name Your Price tool for yourself and join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered, but we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.